Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by today. Well, today I thought it would be fun, and indeed it was when I started doing the research, to talk a little bit about the history of Halloween. And when I got past the age of having exciting birthdays and getting all excited about Christmas, I realized that most of my life, one of my very favorite holidays was Halloween. And as I got older, I think one of the biggest reasons was because you got to do something that's pretty immature and everybody finds it acceptable. Dress up in a costume, be a witch, be a ghost, be Spider-Man, be Wonder Woman, be, you know, whatever you wanted to be for that day, that night, something you would never do on a normal basis. I think it's good for people, in particular adults, because I don't think kids, you know, they're about having fun with what they're going to be and what they see and emulating a character or a superstar or something. That's what's fun for them. But being able to pretend when you're older, I think, is one of the neatest parts of Halloween. I was, however, kind of amused. I guess I knew some of this stuff. I think that they shared some of this stuff with us in school when I was a kid about how All Hallows' Eve came about. I knew that it was Celtic. I knew that it came from way back when, but I didn't realize that all the different things that started out really were kind of spooky. And it was preparing people after being abundant with a harvest, which, you know, happens through the summer months, and, well, the spring you plant your seeds, the summer and the beginning of fall you harvest what you worked all year to have. And it was a way to actually ward off any unwelcome spirits or ghosts, if you will, that might come around in a time of more darkness, because it's winter, more cold in the northern states, well, even here for that matter, but it was all about warding off. And as the years went by, of course, everything evolved and developed into a lot of different things. So I thought it was cool. One of the sites I went to, I'm just going to read this real quick. Shelley's not online yet, so I'm going to read this and then come back to my dashboard. Straddling the line between fall and winter, plenty and paucity, life and death, Halloween is a time of celebration and superstition. It is thought to have originated with the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain, when people would light bonfires and wear costumes to ward off roaming ghosts. In the 8th century, Pope Gregory III designated November 1st as a time to honor all saints and martyrs. The holiday was called All Saints' Day, incorporated some of the traditions of Samhain. The evening before was always known as All Hallows' Eve, and later Halloween. Over time, Halloween evolved into a secular, community-based event characterized by child-friendly activities such as trick-or-treating. In a number of countries around the world, as the days grow shorter and the nights get colder, people continue to usher in the winter season with gatherings, costumes, and sweet treats. Now, what I love about that is even way back then, they understood the fact that darkness, the cold, the shorter daylight hours can bring about depression and a little bit of despair. And it's when things are meager and you have to watch what's it. I mean, not today, everybody. And today is different. But back when these kind of holidays originated, it was about survival. You had to count how much rice you put on the table, how many potatoes were in the cellar. You had to keep an eye on everything because there was no supermarket where you could replenish the cupboards. It was from your own hard work. So I love that this started out to be a way to lift everybody's spirits, if you will, before the long, hard winter. Shelley is here. I'm going to bring her in, and then I'm going to go back to this article because I thought it was very interesting, and it amuses me to see the correlation between how they realized they had to do something to keep everybody's spirits up and the things that we do today. Good morning, Shel.
Morning, Rani. Sorry I'm late, everybody. I got caught up in a little morning activity and lost track of time.
That's all right. No problem. That's why I come in here and sit down at 7, because that's what happens
yeah,
to me, too. But I've been telling everybody, I know you heard part of it, about the history of Halloween.
Yeah.
And having known me for as long as you have, you know I love Halloween. I used to, at the Institute, everybody dressed up. We had a good time. We would even take our guests to a, like a Goodwill or something like that so that they could find stuff and let them dress up too and be a part of it. And I've been talking about, well, the thing that I just read about why they decided it. I love the fact that they got, even way back then, Celts who lived 2,000 years ago, who lived in the area that is now Ireland and the United Kingdom and Northern France, celebrated their New Year on November 1st. And they're the ones that actually, you know, originated this holiday, if you will, or this celebration. But a lot of the stuff I read goes on to tell that they kept doing things. And I thought to myself, well, sure, we still do. I mean, starting with Halloween, you know, which is an opportunity to entertain the little people, an opportunity to have some fun if you're young at heart as well. And then you move into Thanksgiving, which is another gathering time to make sure everybody is okay. And if you can envision an old town way back, I'm talking about way, way back, and sometimes the weather in your northern states prohibited any visiting, and there were no phones, and there was no computer, and there was so a lot of times people would be all alone and not even be able to weather the storm. So Thanksgiving would come along and be another opportunity for families far and wide to come together and celebrate being family and celebrate the fact that they were able to put a meal on the table. I've always been amused at how different the meals can be, too, having grown up in the United States. And, it was always turkey, you know, when I was a kid and even today. But it's amusing how many other celebratory Thanksgivings that have all kinds of stuff to offer. So then you have, you get through November, which is another tough month, and then in December you have Christmas and then the New Year. And, of course, the New Year is celebratory of new beginnings. So, but with all the stuff that you and I talked about when we did Mental Illness Week, and we went back to all of the times when people would be institutionalized for next to nothing, it must have been horrible, because it probably happened to every single family, Shell, because of these kind of things, though. So they recognized it, and this was kind of their fix, even though in the very beginning, I think it was wise men and stuff like that, and witches, of course, they were supposed to be very wise. Now they're, you know, kind of one of the bad girls, but originally they were almost like a shaman, you know. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to be very, very wise and have answers to medical questions and spiritual questions and things like that. So they've evolved quite a bit into what we needed them to be, evidently. So the ancient origins of Halloween, as I said, goes back 2,000 years ago. And when they decided that the new year would start on November 1st, this day marked the end of summer and the harvest and the beginning of the dark, cold winter, a time of year that was often associated with human death. Celts believed that on the night before the new year, well, imagine, a lot of people didn't eat, didn't have warmth, so it kind of coincides, right?
I never would have thought that.
Yeah, I know. It surprised me when I read it, but of course it made perfect sense. Celts believed that on the night before the new year, the boundary between the worlds of the living and the dead became blurred. On the night of October 31st, they celebrated Samhain, when it was believed that the ghosts of the dead returned to earth. In addition to causing trouble and damaging crops, Celts thought that the presence of the otherworldly spirits made it easier for the druids, or Celtic priests, to make predictions about the future. For a people entirely dependent on the volatile natural world, these prophecies were an important source of comfort and direction during the long dark winter. See, for me, even though some of this is, you know, I don't know, what's the word I want, superstitious and things like that, mm-hmm. but it also makes sense to me, right? It's also got some real sense in it.
Well, see, it can seem superstition, but the bottom line is, for anybody that studies energy and things like that, the atmosphere on the earth is different at different types of the year, and different type of events can take place as a result. So when you have these highly spiritual groups creating different types of ceremonies that are done throughout the year, what they're working with is the energy of the planet. They're working with the different types of vortexes that are created by different energy fields. And it's something that now in our modern day age, with all of our electronic and computer equipment, now scientists are starting to discover that, in fact, there are energy vortexes all over the planet. So what was seen as superstition for thousands of years is now starting to say, hey, maybe there was an actual reason why this was done on that day, because look what's happening in that area of the world at that time of the year. So it starts taking a little bit of superstition out of it, and a little bit more, they were really tapped into something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, this is astutely accurate, albeit some of the reasoning is you know, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it is true, but. For me, some of the reasoning is a little bit far-fetched, and I can understand that back in the day, these things, you made your own assessment of what went on in your life, And let's face it, some people didn't have a long time back in those days to learn anything any different. Because even though one of the shows last year, we talked about longevity and the fact that we're growing older now. But the truth of the matter is, way back in this time, depending on the climate and where you lived and the richness of the land, people lived to be quite old, quite old. Remember when we found those facts that talked about there was a time when people did live to be quite old, although not the general population. There were just different groups of people that lived to be quite old, and I always thought that was never true. I even thought Indians and things like that, only, you know, a long life was 40 years, and that's not true. So at any rate, to commemorate the event that they started celebrating, the Druids built huge sacred bonfires where the people gathered to burn crops and animals as sacrifices to the Celtic deities. During the celebration, the Celts wore costumes, typically consisting of animal heads and skins, and attempted to tell each other's fortunes. When the celebration was over, they relit their hearth fires, which they had extinguished earlier that evening, from the sacred bonfire to help protect them during the coming winter. By 43 AD, the Roman Empire had conquered the majority of Celtic territory. In the course of the 400 years that they ruled the Celtic lands, two festivals of Roman origin were combined with the traditional Celtic celebration of Samhain. The first was Feralia, a day in late October when the Romans traditionally commemorated the passing of the dead. The second was a day to honor Pomona, the Roman goddess of fruit and trees. The symbol of Pomona is the apple, and the incorporation of this celebration to Samhain probably explains the tradition, to get this, of bobbing for apples. That
wow.
is practiced today on Halloween. Now, who would have thought that there was, I mean, I just thought somebody thought, oh, that'd be fun for the kids to do. Who
wow.
thought it had any kind of history like that? Oh, that's funny.
Amazing.
On May 13th, 609 A.D., Pope Boniface IV dedicated the Pantheon in Rome in honor of all Christian martyrs, and the Catholic Feast of All Martyrs Day was established in the Western Church. Pope Gregory III, from 731 to 741, later expanded the festival to include all saints as well as all martyrs, and moved the observance from May 13th to November 1st. By the 9th century, the influence of Christianity had spread into the Celtic lands, where it gradually blended with and supplanted the older Celtic rites. In 1000 AD, the church would make November 2nd All Souls Day, a day to honor the dead. It is widely believed today that the church was attempting to replace the Celtic festival of the dead with a related but church-sanctioned holiday. Well, even way back then, they tried to control everything. All Souls
mm-hmm.
Day was celebrated similarly, if I don't
you
read
did
it,
real
I can
good.
Say it, similarly. I don't know, I've never been able to do all of those syllables in one breath, I guess, to Samhain, with big bonfires, parades, and dressing up in costumes as saints, angels, and devils. The All Saints Day celebration was also called All Hallows or All Hallowmas from Middle English Hallow Messe, meaning All Saints Day. And the night before it, the traditional night of Samhain in the Celtic religion, began to be called All Hallows Eve and eventually Halloween. So it didn't really come to America until much later. It was limited to, in the beginning, to the colonial state. States, New England, because of the rigid Protestant belief systems there. Halloween was a much more common was much more common in Maryland and the southern colonies, as the beliefs and customs of different European ethnic groups as well as the American Indians meshed, a distinctly American version of Halloween began to emerge. The first celebrations included play parties, public events held to celebrate the harvest where neighbors would share stories of the dead, tell each other's fortunes, dance and sing. Colonial Halloween festivities also featured the telling of ghost stories and mischief-making of all kinds. By the middle of the 19th century, annual autumn festivities were common, but Halloween was not yet celebrated everywhere in the country. Not until the second half of the 19th century, America was flooded with new immigrants. These new immigrants, especially the millions of Irish fleeing Ireland's potato famine of 1846, helped to popularize leave it to us Irish. Have a party whenever you can. Have a party. Help to popularize the celebration of Halloween nationally. Taking from Irish and English traditions, Americans began to dress up in costumes and go house to house asking for food or money, a practice that eventually became today's trick-or-treat tradition. Young women believed that on Halloween they could divine the name or appearance of their future husband by doing tricks with yarn, apple parings, or mirrors. Oh, how funny. In the late 1800s, there was a move in America to mold Halloween into a holiday more about community and neighborly get-togethers than about ghosts, pranks, and witchcraft. At the turn of the century, Halloween parties for both children and adults became the most common way to celebrate the day. Parties focused on games, food of the season, and festive costumes. Parents were encouraged by newspapers and community leaders to take anything frightening or grotesque out of Halloween celebrations. Because of these efforts, Halloween lost most of its superstitious and religious overtones by the beginning of the 20th century. You know, even though I can understand why they did that, that's actually kind of sad, because when you talk about symbolism and when you talk about the origination of so many of the things we do today, I like, myself, I like to know how this got to be what it is. Even in my own lifetime, it's evolved to be the same but different, you know?
Yeah. I think it's fascinating when we do these, you know, when we review the history of a particular holiday, because so much of what people do today is out of habit or culture or because their parents did it or the great-grandparents did it, and people don't even know why they do it anymore. They just know that they've always done it, so they continue and they do it for their family without knowing the origins of it. And when you learn the origins, it makes it richer. It makes it have a meaning. And I think there's something to be said for that. When you do something just because you've always done it, but you don't even know why you're doing it, there's an element lost there. And even though you enjoy it, you know, all holiday celebrations are joyful and family and friend oriented and fun oriented and celebratory, oriented. The bottom line is when you understand the history behind it and you see the bigger picture, it kind of adds another dimension to it. I think it makes it even something, it doesn't take away from any of the fun, but now it makes it more meaningful. And I think it's a good thing for people to know the greater history behind so much of what we take for granted today.
So do I. I absolutely do. And I think there may be some worth to preparing for a hard winter, even today. I think there may be some worth in spending time with friends and family to respect and say goodbye again to people that are no longer with us. I think it's cleansing, and I think it's healthy. As a matter of fact, you know, I was just thinking while I was saying that, you know how People Magazine does this, the Today Show does this, they do the year in review and they always talk about who's passed this year, you know, prominent figures and stuff like that.
Right.
It's always a very sad show. I usually sit and watch it by myself so I can bawl. But it's you know, you say, like this year, everybody's going to say goodbye to Robin Williams. There's
Joan
gonna
Rivers.
Be a lot. And Joan Rivers. And, I mean, there's been a lot this year. You know, there's really been a lot
really,
this
really
year.
Like,
of,
I mean, I said some really, really iconic figures passed
yes.
away this year. Robin Williams and
yes.
Joan Rivers are the most iconic celebrities, you know, that there are.
Mm-hmm. So we do it in a way, but it needs to be pulled in. I learned this at the Institute on Thanksgiving. My family and I do a circle and say, you know, goodbye or thank you or whatever happened. In 2009, when Mike got hurt and we had Thanksgiving at my house, and of course Michael couldn't be there yet, and Mike and Val weren't there, but the rest of the family was there, and all of my grandchildren in the circle said something about Michael. And I thought it was good for us. I thought it was really, really good for us, right?
Yes.
And then, you know, in the next several years, we gave thanks for that. And then, of course, last year we lost my sister at Christmas time. So even at Christmas, at the end of the evening, Christmas Eve, we all talked about Barbara and remembered Christmases with Barbara. I think that's good for us. And it looks like they got that. Of course, their numbers were bigger. Like I said before, longevity and life was a whole different time then. But makes me feel better to think that our forefathers were, in some cases, more open-minded than we are, you know?
Absolutely. There, you know, when you go back through history, there were times in history that mentally and emotionally we were a little bit more advanced than we are now with all our technology. And then there's other areas where we've kind of leapt forward, thank God. So it's always good to look back in history and see something that might have been working a little bit better than what's happening today and bringing it about again, kind of, resurrecting it, so to speak, because not everything that was done away with should have been done away with. I mean, look at all the... classic example is look at all the old what's the word for that, like using a homemade remedy to heal somebody. Oh my God, there's a name for that and I'm drawing a blank on it. But anyway, you know, like home remedies. Look
wives
at all the home
tales.
Remedies that run away with prescription drugs, and
like
now
old
they're
wives
all
tales.
Huh?
Like
yeah,
old
yeah,
wives
or wives,
tales.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know. But what it is now modern day, a lot of physicians are finding out that a lot of these old home remedies are actually more effective than the prescription drug that was developed by some scientist in a $1 million project, you know. And a lot of people are going back to more natural ways of healing themselves. So not everything that was done hundreds of years ago should have been done away with. And it's nice that people go back and see that and say, hey, this was a phenomenal practice. You know, I think we should start doing this again now because it brings people together. It does something benefit. But the whole idea of making the circle, whether it be with a family or a community, it could be with four people, it could be with 40 people. It doesn't make any difference. But that act of sharing your thanks and appreciation by having your thoughts go there and realizing you have things to be thankful and appreciative about, or just remembering a dear one that's passed away and honoring them in love and light, this is there's nothing but positive about that. And I think it can enrich a family, and it can enrich the members of each family when they're put in a position of saying this out loud in front of other people, in front of their other family members. First of all, you get a little insight into the fact that other family members do have appreciation over things, because what you said made me think of it. We've done that in my family sometimes. And sometimes things, you know, some of the family members, that you say, wow, I never realized that person was so deep, you know. And sometimes you hear things from people that surprise you, and you see a new element to that particular individual. So it's a really, really positive practice. And I think more families should try it and make it part of their own family routine and their own family legacy.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. And it's also like it's nice to have an open forum, but it's also nice to have a very family-oriented personal forum for that,
right,
kind
exactly.
of,
right?
You know, and for some reason, when it's more private like that, people are more forthcoming with their feelings, and I think that's healthy as well.
Of course.
So it says in the 20s and the 30s, Halloween had become a secular, albeit community-centered holiday, with parades and town-wide parties as the featured entertainment. Despite the best efforts of many schools and communities, vandalism began to plague Halloween celebrations in many communities during this time. I can remember some of that. By the 50s, town leaders had successfully limited vandalism, and Halloween had evolved into a holiday directly mainly at the young. Due to the high numbers of young children during the 50s baby boom, parties moved from town civic centers into the classroom or home where they could be more easily accommodated. Between 1920 and 1950, these century-old practices of trick-or-treating was also revived. Trick-or-treating was a relatively inexpensive way for an entire community to share the Halloween celebration. In theory, families could also prevent tricks being played on them by providing the neighborhood children with small treats. A new American tradition was born, and it has continued to grow. Today, Americans spend an estimated $6 billion annually on Halloween, making it the country's second largest commercial holiday.
Wow.
So,
I never would have thought that.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. An American Halloween tradition of trick-or-treating probably dates back to the early All Souls Day parades in England. During the festivities, poor citizens would beg for food and families would give them pastry called soul cakes in return for their promise to pray for the family's dead relatives. The practice, which was referred to as going a-souling, oh, how funny is that? Going a-souling was eventually taken up by children who would visit the houses of their neighborhood and be given ale, food, and money, going a-souling. Now, that's in England. The tradition of dressing in costume for Halloween has always been both European and Celtic from their roots. Hundreds of years ago, winter was an uncertain and frightening time. Food supplies often ran low, and for the many people afraid of the dark, the short days of winter were full of constant worry. On Halloween, when it was believed that the ghosts came back to the earthly world, people thought that they would encounter ghosts if they left their homes. To avoid being recognized by these ghosts, people would wear masks when they left their homes after dark, so that the ghosts would mistake them for fellow spirits. Now, how funny is that? On Halloween, ghosts away from their houses, people would place bowls of food outside their homes to appease the ghost and prevent them from attempting to enter. So those things, you know, really, they rooted from superstition. Albeit, I wasn't there, so I don't know. Maybe it really did happen. I'm calling it superstition, but maybe they did have those energies. Halloween has always been a holiday of mystery, magic, and superstition. Mm-hmm. It began as a Celtic end of the summer festival, and, well, I've already told you all that. Today's Halloween ghosts are often depicted as more fearsome and malevolent, and the customs and superstitions are scarier, too. We avoid crossing paths with black cats, afraid that they might bring us bad luck. This idea has its roots in the Middle Ages, when people believed that witches avoided detection by turning themselves into cats. We try not to walk under ladders for the same reason. This superstition may have come from the ancient Egyptians, who believed that triangles were sacred. It also may have something to do with the fact that walking under a leaning ladder tends to be fairly unsafe. Amen. And around Halloween especially, we try to avoid breaking mirrors, stepping on cracks in the road, or spilling salt. But what about the Halloween traditions and beliefs that today's trick-or-treaters have forgotten all about? Many of these obsolete rituals focused on the future instead of the past and the living instead of the dead. In particular, many had to do with helping young women identify their future husbands and reassuring them that someday, with luck, by next Halloween, be married. In the 18th century Ireland, a matchmaking cook might bury a ring in her mashed potatoes on Halloween night, hoping to bring true love to the diner who found it. In Scotland, fortune tellers recommend that an eligible young woman name a hazelnut for each of her suitors, then toss the nuts into the fireplace. The nut that burned to ashes rather than popping or exploding, the story went, represented the girl's future husband. In some versions of this legend, confusing the opposite was true. The nut that burned away symbolized a love that would not last. Another tale had it that if a young woman ate a sugary concoction made out of walnuts, hazelnuts, and nutmeg before bed on Halloween night, she would dream about her future husband. Young women tossed apple peels over their shoulders, hoping that the peels would fall on the floor in the shape of the future husband's initials, tried to learn about their futures by peering at egg yolks floating in a bowl of water, and stood in front of mirrors in darkened rooms holding candles, looking over their shoulders. This is so funny. I cannot believe that. Paige jumped up from me, so I have to come back to what I said. Holding candles and looking over their shoulders for their husbands' faces. Other rituals are more I know. Can you believe that? I mean, and some of these things that I'm talking about, I'm remembering, you know, kind of low-budget scary movies. Aren't you?
Yep, yep. Did you see
looking in a mirror with and waiting for, oh, my gosh. At some Halloween parties, the first guest to find a burr on a chestnut hunt would be the first to marry. At others, the first successful apple bobber would be the first down the aisle. How funny is that? Well, see how important marriage was back in that day, because women, we weren't supposed to survive by ourselves.
I'm still dealing with the apple peel, and what if the guy's name was like Thomas? How do you get a T out of an apple peel? I'm trying to figure out how some of the letters would have been made, you know? Like,
It is funny, but then they wrap it up by saying this. Of course, whether we're asking for romantic advice or trying to avoid 7 years of bad luck, each one of these Halloween superstitions relies on the goodwill of the very same spirits whose presence the early Celts felt so keenly. So, and of course, Shell and I are very open-minded, and we both have had times in our lives when we felt energy and we felt the presence of somebody that nobody else can see, and we have both had readings done. We're very, like I said, very open-minded. Some of it, I'll speak for myself here, some of it I find to be hocus pocus, for sure. But a good majority of it, I don't believe that once, because there's so much of us that is energy, I don't believe that once your body has given up, the rest of you does as well. So it makes sense to me that there are spirits and that there are energies around us There is, I have not, since my brother passed away, I think it's been 10, 12, about 12 years ago now, I don't do a holiday without feeling his presence, and many other times too, but in particular, when it's almost like he knows everybody's going to be there, he's there. I feel him. And now I have that that feeling with my sister. I often feel the presence of my mother, my father, my grandparents, people that I loved a lot, but not quite as strongly as I do my brother and sister.
I recently went to, this was a couple weeks ago, I recently went to one of these reading sessions where it's a group setting, kind of like what we did with Donna. And it was something like that with a group of people. And even before, we had written down on a piece of paper the names of a couple people that had passed on, and then you fold the paper up and you put it in a bucket. Well, even before the individual who was doing the group readings had touched any of the papers, he was getting images from some of the people, and he went around the room even before anything started. So he hadn't touched any of the papers yet. And he went around the room, and he was like, oh, there's somebody by the name of so-and-so. Does anybody know them? And somebody said yes. And then he looked right at me, and he said, do you know someone named Agnes? And Agnes is my grandmother, and that was one of the people I'd written on the piece of paper. And he said,
wow.
Do you know someone named Agnes? And I said, yes, that's my grandmother. And he said, and then he said two other names. One wasn't even on the paper. And they were all, and he was looking right at me. He said, these three people are here to speak to you. And I did get messages later from all of them. But one of the names wasn't even on the paper. And it was somebody I knew. And it was somebody that had passed on that I had been talking about on the way there. And nobody there, they were all strangers to me. The only people I knew were the hosts. But nobody else there even would have known. And nobody knew that my grandmother's name was Agnes, because I never call her Agnes. I call her Grandma. So the only other person that knew Agnes was my grandmother was my sister. So that's, see, when it's that specific, when you have these fortune tellers or these people that are doing these group readings and they say, oh, I have somebody here, a relative with the first letter M in their name, and they died about 6 months ago. Well, for God's sake, you have a group of 40 people. There's a pretty good chance that there's somebody in there that lost a female with the letter M in there because it's the most common name, you know. That's just pulling from the audience and then working with them. That's manipulating an audience. But when you get a psychic that looks at an individual and says a specific name, Agnes is not a very common name, and looks at me, not anybody else in the room, and there were like almost 40 of us, looked at me and said, there's someone named Agnes here for you. Do you know who that is? And it happened to have been the person I wrote on the piece of paper. So that's when you know that you're dealing with somebody who really is sensitive and tapped in, because it was too specific. And he did that to about four or five other people that night, where people that were not on the papers came through to talk to them with real, some of the names were bizarre because some of these people were foreign, and some of the names were like, I'd never even heard this name before. And he even had problems pronouncing them. There's one name he could not pronounce, but he came really close to it. And he's like, I don't know how to pronounce this name. He said, it looks like, and he kept saying it. And the woman said, you're really close. And she finished, and it was almost identical, but he was leaving out like a syllable. He just couldn't understand how to pronounce it, you know. And it wasn't even on the woman's paper. But she was foreign, and when you say the name, you say it with an accent. So he actually did a pretty good job of understanding what this energy was trying to get across to him. But that's when you know it's real, when it's nobody knows these people, nobody knew their other relatives, and he brought through at least probably 10 additional family connections that evening, in addition to what people had written down on their papers, and I was one of the one that he brought an extra person through for. So it was quite remarkable for me, and that's when you know you're dealing with somebody who's really connected.
Yeah, and I agree with that as well. And I also know that we've been some places where, you know, a lot of just really, really observant people who can watch body language, people who are real people, have a knack for knowing what's going on in your life just by watching you. So, but on the same token, you know, when you're talking about names and you're talking about the different things like that, there has to be, you know, insight, talent, connections, whatever you want to call it. So I believe that too. And of course, Shelley and I have been to a couple of those kind of things together. And sometimes we're blown away, and other times we just roll our eyes. So it does depend on who you're seeing and what the deal is. So so this was nice. When did you do that, Shel?
A couple weeks ago, I was at Paula's house, similar to what you guys had attended a couple years ago. It was something similar to that.
Well, we have a friend too that we are friends with because we are very close to a lot of her family, and the family brought her to meet us on a couple different occasions. And in the past 3 or 4 years, out of the blue, and she's not real young. She's not real old either, but she's a middle-aged person, and she realized she had a connection. And she's done some stuff with us, and we are kept up to date with what's going on with her by her mom, who is a dear friend of ours. And she, in the beginning, didn't know what was going on, and then decided that she needed to embrace whatever it was, and she's actually manifested more strengths in that arena, and she feels very strongly by other energies. So it is what it is, folks, and you can believe it or not believe it. Totally irrelevant to me. What anybody believes about that, but there is some comfort involved with believing in something after this. There is some comfort when you lose a loved one to know that from now on they're with you always.
Right.
It wasn't true before, you know. So,
yeah, because in a lot of cases, loved ones will stay behind to kind of watch out for you, guide you. Sometimes, you know, like sometimes you're thinking of something and all of a sudden a thought pops in your head and you're like, where did that come from? It can come from loved ones that are by you that are trying to guide you. And if you would listen to these thoughts that pop into your head, you know, it's all energy. So if that's how the community, sometimes they'll come to you in dreams. Sometimes they'll come to you and they'll inspire a thought in you. They'll whisper in your ear, so to speak. And we all experience that, but some people don't put any mind to it. You know, but you're thinking of something or you're having a problem and all of a sudden this neat idea just seems to come out of nowhere. It really isn't coming out of nowhere. It's coming from somebody that cares about you and is trying to give you kind of a push in the right direction. And that's kind of exciting and comforting at the same time when you think about it.
I think it is, big time. I also think is, you know, some of us feel that and hear that and ignore it, and others of us embrace it. And it's like everything else in this life, you know. It's there. It's up to you as to whether or not you want to utilize the strength that comes from believing in certain things that other people don't believe in is, I think, rewarding. But that's just my opinion. I believe in a lot of things other people don't believe in. I believe that humans are basically good and kind, and you would not believe all the I see when I say that, but I do. I just believe that all the material things in our world and all the worth that's put on all the material things in our world has changed a lot of people. I've been, you know... I don't want to get on a tangent about this, but every time I watch, this time of year, it's all about politics, right? And all about I turn on the news usually between 5:30 and 6, and I'm usually still in the bedroom. and I might be just laying there with my eyes closed, or I might be up doing things, but I'm listening. Every commercial right now during prime time is somebody bad-mouthing somebody else. Every stinking commercial. Every one. And I'm like, what is wrong with all of you? I don't get that. You know, so I say to people all the time, nobody cares. If you don't like somebody, don't be friends with them. But nobody cares to hear your negative commentary on that person, whether or not you're running for the same job, the same office, or anything. Nobody cares what you think. I have the right to think what I want to think.
That's why I love Rick Murphy's commercials so much. All he ever talks about in his commercials is what sets him apart, what makes him better, what makes him a good choice, and I love that.
Yeah, I like
that. I wish
they
would talk to that and leave the rest alone, because it's so negative and insulting.
And, you know, and it's like, well, today it made me feel sick to my stomach when I watched the old mayor of New York say that, you know, he's been in politics for all these years and he was this for 20,000 years and he did this and he did that and he's met good people, bad people, some he liked, some he didn't like, some he was indifferent to. But I've never met anybody that I respected less than Charlie Crist. And I thought to myself, now exactly what does that mean? That's all you're going to say, and let us all decide what horrible things Charlie Crist did to you to make you say that.
Right.
I didn't give it, you know, I didn't give it not one ounce of credence, because you're not going to tell me what he did? Then shut up.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
So,
I don't like that they're like dramatic productions. You know, they have the dark music and the black and white photos and stuff. You know, if you have to say something, say, look, I'm a better choice because I'm going to do this. My opponent voted no to all these things that would have been beneficial to you, but I'm going to make sure we go. You know, you can make it more upbeat and more upbeat about you and still say a few things about your opponent that people may need to know without turning it into a depressing, dramatic production. And I think that's what offends me, that they go too much to the Hollywood type. You know, it's supposed to be an information commercial. Keep it that way.
Exactly. So I just wanted to bring that up because I thought to myself, you know, when you're talking about what everybody believes in, and we go back to Celtic times and realize that even way back then, people understood that depression and the way the climate, the weather, the light, the dark, all those things play on everybody's sensitivities and their mood, if you will, their mood swings, all those kind of things. And then I look at the world the way it is today, and I recognized in all the articles that I read this morning that in every one, the leaders recognized an opportunity to do something for their, you know, their town, their following, the people that they professed to be leaders of. So they embraced old rituals, they embraced old beliefs, and made them safer, healthier, happier, and more or less blessed them as a leader should. And then,
mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I find that to be so refreshing, since now, I mean, all the controversy this morning about this nurse who knows she's not sick, she hasn't tested positive, she never ran a temperature. Chris Christie there won't even let her into Jersey, keeps her in a tent for 3 days, and then wants to quarantine her in her house. Now they're going overboard, and they picked one woman to do it to. Why did they pick one woman to do it to? Because she spoke up and said, bullshit, I'm not sick. Quarantine me for 3 days. Now let me go home. I've never run a temperature.
Wow.
I've never done anything. And, but instead of him, you know, saying, okay, well, you're right. I'm a politician. You're a nurse. You went over there, gave of your time, your energy, your life, everything, and it's true. You haven't run a temperature. You haven't done this. You haven't done that. And go ahead and go home. But now they're all too scared because too many decisions were made like that in the very beginning without proper information. So, again, our leaders are just, they're so afraid that somebody's not going to agree with them, Shell. They're so afraid that they won't get a unanimous applause when they make a decision. Then they shouldn't be a leader. Because
the problem is a lot of times they make a decision based on public opinion, how they think the public is going to react to what they're doing, than what actually the right decision is. So if he thinks people are going to think he's making a mistake, even when he's not, he's going to opt to do something that's going to increase public opinion in a positive way. And like you said, that's not being a leader. That's somebody who's doing something for effect. And I think that makes a poor leader and that makes a poor decision maker when your decision is based on public appearance and not what the right thing to do is.
Right. So instead of being called leaders, we should call them pleasers.
That's really good. I like that.
So do I.
And it's another good slogan
right
for a T-shirt.
Yeah, that's exactly. It is. I think that, and that's the problem. It's about whether everybody's going to still love you. And believe me, I have that affliction, so I recognize it, and I know that it's true. Because everybody wants to be loved by everybody, and you can't be. You can't be. You have to look at the big picture and make an assessment and make the right decision if you're a leader. If you're a pleaser, you say, well, what if? And if everybody stands up and applauds, that's what you go with, whether you believe in it or not. Right? If everybody gives you thumbs down and starts yelling and carrying on and everything, then you know that you haven't pleased everybody, so you rescind that comment, and you know, it's almost like, what about this? Well, what about that? Well, what about this? Instead of, or everybody takes a stand about something, and the next day you take it right to the nth degree, and that's not what everybody wanted either. There doesn't seem to be any moderation in any of this either. Well, and when we read this story today, and when I did all the other research I did, and I found so many cute stories, and some kind of scary, but it was all about what worked for their house. If we tone it right down and just say, you know, instead of community or this, it's what worked for their house and kept everybody copacetic. That's what's perfect. Now, the deal is then to have several houses that can be copacetic. And again, a lot of that takes the embracing of other people's beliefs, you know, analyzing safety versus, you know, chivalry and all of those kind of things. But there is a way to do it. And I think when we read old history like this, we see it. We see the evolution of being able to get from a pretty pagan, ritualistic holiday to what it is today. So, but we're just about out of time. I do want to state, Shell, do you know they voted for the acreage growth?
Do I know what?
You know that they're trying to outbuy Pratt Whitney. They're wanting to put in all these homes and businesses and all this kind of stuff, and people in your part of the acre have been fighting that.
Right.
But it went through last night. Did you know that?
No. I kind of was for it. I mean, I understand some of the concerns, but I was kind of for it, you know, putting up
progress, And one old man stood up last night and he said, I love it. He said, I don't have to drive all the way over to West Palm Beach to see my doctor. Good point. So,
yeah, because they're putting up shopping centers. And, I mean, they're going to make a community.
Yes, yes. I think it's, well, some people say you're taking away our ruralism. There is no ruralism there. There's houses right on top of each other. That's not rural. So, but we're out of time. I want to thank everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. And even though tomorrow is Halloween, I wanted to keep it recap day because we had a lot of things that we were still in mid-conversation. But everybody go out and have a great day. God bless. And we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Rini. Thanks, everyone. We'll speak to you in the morning.